afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. Lots of things are going on today, and big moves in the stock market, and of course, gold today in reaction to Janet Yellen's decision to raise rates a whole quarter point. We'll be talking about that after the first segment of the program today, as we do have Wendy Wilson joining us. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Wendy. Melody.
Get it right, Al. Wake up. Wake up, Al. It's showtime. Anyway, gold today didn't have a very good showing after they came out with the rate increases. You have gold down $1,780, currently the New York spot price after market at $1,141. Silver was down $13 at $1,685. Platinum was down $13 at $925, along with palladium down $6 at $727. The USDX today, holy smokes, was up 1.05. I didn't expect to have that big of an increase. 102.10. Crude oil was down 2.05 at 50.93. And her little quarter point certainly did shake up the markets today. You have the Dow off its, it was lower, came back. All this happened really in the last, 20 minutes of trading today, because the markets were fairly steady after she came out at 2 o'clock, because I've been following gold. You have the Dow down 119,793. You have the NASDAQ down 27 at 5,436. I can't imagine what the 10-year is. We'll get that in just a minute. The S&P down 18, 2,253. 10-year yield, 2.52%, 2.52% up 0.04. So, interesting day in the markets after the announcement of the Fed Reserve increased its key interest rate by 0.25% today. And again, as I mentioned, we'll talk about that right after this first break that we will go into in about 20 minutes. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al. How was everybody?
Hello, Wendy.
Hey, I thought we'd talk about how the country, the United States, is measuring up regarding health compared to other countries. Because, you know, if we take a real long, hard look at the health of Americans, what we're going to find is it's become normal to be ill. Today, a lot of patients over 50, if they go to their doctor's office, they're questioned by the healthcare professionals, and they're asked if they're taking a daily drug support treatment, and the professionals are surprised and shocked if they say no. So we have to ask, why are so many Americans, people all over the world, really so chronically sick? So if Americans are really so healthy, why are they spending about $10,000 a year on health insurance premiums?
Per household, per individual, $10,000 per what?
Typically, that depends on your coverage, but it could be anywhere from, you know, an individual to a family of two to four, depending on your provider. So, you know, this is really an indicator, though, that our nation is in the grip of a system that promotes chronic disease. So some people may disagree. And in that case, then I propose that instead of paying our physicians when we're sick, let's just pay them a few cents a day while we're well, and then stop paying them if we get sick. That way, the incentive is on keeping patients well. Okay? So let's take a look at some of the things that may be driving up chronic illness. The Emory University did did research on public health records to see what the statistics showed on the number of Americans living with chronic health conditions, and this is what they found. They said half of all Americans are living with at least one chronic health condition. Number two, the health issues of Americans has increased in complexity and with more chronic conditions. And number three, they said the health of Americans has increased the multi-morbidity, which means people are dying from two or more long-term conditions. So what are some of these conditions? Well, the research team compiled a list of the chronic conditions that are plaguing Americans, and they were asthma, cirrhosis, hepatitis, lung cancer, high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, HIV and AIDS, stroke, and pancreatitis. So now the Commonwealth Fund also did a report. And even with the Affordable Care Act that is in place, that was said to improve many of the healthcare system problems, what they said is the act actually did not overhaul those problems and improve anything. Instead, they exacerbated pre-existing healthcare problems, made them more expensive to treat. So when they compiled their report, they said this: when the United States is compared to 11 other major countries, Americans are economically more devastated and sicker. Number two, they said America ranks last with 41% of its population living with multiple chronic health conditions. And three, they said the U.S. chronically ill, those that have these chronically ill conditions, their report revealed that 14% of them don't get adequate health care from the industry, which is twice that of Germany, the United Kingdom, Netherlands, and Sweden. So what do you suppose could be driving these chronic conditions? Anybody going to take a guess?
Diet.
Okay, that's one.
It may be that we're taking too many drugs, and I don't just mean the ones that are illegal.
Well, typically you're prescribed a drug when you get a diagnosis of a condition, but you get multiple drugs going, it could give you a disease, true, secondary disease. But actually, it's right in our face, typically, other than diet and the food, the quality of the food. The National Vaccine Information Center, that was founded in 1982, they were founded to educate the public and prevent vaccine-related injuries and death. But according to their research, which was compiled for medical files, there's a wide spectrum of vaccine complications. So the Institute of Medicine admitted that the safety of the current federally recommended childhood vaccine schedule has not been fully scientifically evaluated. In their 2002 journal, The Evaluating Biological Mechanisms of Adverse Events, on page 82 of their report titled Adverse Effects of Vaccines, Evidence of Casuality, they said this: we acknowledge there is a high risk factor not yet identified by medical science that can increase individual susceptibility to vaccine reactions. And a lot of virologists have found, when they connect the dots, that these vaccines can give you chronic diseases, you know, internal medicine type chronic diseases. Now, the National Vaccine Information Center said, like prescription drugs, vaccines are pharmaceutical products and carry two risks. One, the risk of the product will not work, and two, the risk of the product will cause harm. So we don't tend to think of the vaccines that way because the way they've been promoted. So, and I think the National Institute of Medicine would have more accurately have stated that scientific medicine is aware of the high-risk vaccines that they present, but hides that truth from the public. Now, the Institute of Medicine also said that the accumulative effect of vaccines and the changes in the vaccine schedule, in other words, adding more vaccines, giving them at younger ages, and in a combination doses, has not been assessed by modern medicine. Isn't that astonishing?
It's amazing. Because you would think that if it was doing us any good, someone would do a study to prove that if you take these vaccines, here's the benefits.
Right.
If they're not doing a study, it implies to me the benefits are outweighed by the disabilities.
Well, where the Achilles heel is here is explained in their next explanation. This is the Institute of Health Medicine, 2013. They said most vaccine-related research is focused on the outcome of a single immunization at a single visit. Elements of the vaccine schedule are not evaluated once it is adjusted to accommodate a new vaccine. So the key elements of the entire schedule, the number and frequency of the vaccines, the timing, the order they're given, the age that they're administered at, have not been systematically examined and evaluated in research studies. So they just look at a single vaccine, and once it's approved, it's good.
Why is it, do you think, why do you think that they don't bother to actually do these studies?
Well, I think it's sort of like they've never done studies on do vaccines cause cancer, because they know they do. You know,
I think another point is that the government has passed laws where big pharma can't be held liable if there's an adverse reaction to some of these drugs.
Well, yeah. Actually, the swine flu pandemic of 76 was the last time the public could actually attack a pharmaceutical company with a lawsuit mm-hmm. directly. That was it. After that, when they paid out all this money because people had Guillain-Barré syndrome from that vaccine, that's when lobbyists got in motion and paid off our Congress, and now we can't even do anything about it. It makes it very difficult for you to qualify for their vaccine injury court, you know?
I understand.
Now, there's this one advocate. He's against mandatory vaccines. His name's Larry Cook. He puts it this way. He describes vaccines as being a time bomb because vaccines exploit the weakest part of a person's health and can produce either immediate injury and death or a time-release symptom of disease. So according to Cook, get this, the CDC has a collection of scientific studies and reports from doctors who do report adverse events from vaccine, which link the vaccines to death and many of the chronic diseases Americans are developing. Now, if anybody out there is listening, is on our newsletter list, they get the hot link to that CDC list, and they can look it up for themselves. So also, there was a graph on the CDC's website where they had this neurological damage graph from, get this, Al, Melanie, flu shots. And it was reported that there's a 50% risk for those under the age of 21 of getting Guillain-Barré syndrome from a flu shot.
Well, yep. This whole thing is what it indicates. My first guess was it was something to do with our diet. And you point out, actually, it's vaccines, and there is a common denominator. Mm. It's what we put in our bodies.
Right.
All right? Even though diet may not be number one, we're still adding these vaccines, and it tells us you need to be wary, aware, and cautious about letting anybody inject things into your body, and you got to be concerned about what you eat also. There's a requirement for personal responsibility.
Absolutely. Can't agree more with that. Now, there's really, you have to wonder how many cases weren't reported in this area that would actually show the true magnitude of what this threat, you know, and more data on this from the CDC is it coming forward. More information would also make us want to ask, you know, the scientific community, you know, what about pregnant women? You're now advocating to vaccinate pregnant women when you typically didn't do that. It was against the rules to do that. I suspect they already have a bunch of data based on the H1N1 bird flu of 2009 and 10 when they started vaccinating women and they had spontaneous abortions. Over 50% of them lost the baby.
So. That's just astonishing, amazing, horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And the people responsible can't be sued.
It's terrible, isn't it? I mean, very frustrating, obviously, for families that have been hurt by this. Now, a majority of the health professionals in the system kind of ignorant of what's going on here, and those who do figure it out, well, they know what happens to whistleblowers. They don't fare so well against this powerful, influential system. Now, just think of all this unnecessary, undue cost and burden that's in place on Americans, on businesses, and this nation. So it's really growing bigger and more powerful, too, this industry. Here, let me give you an example, Al. For instance, in 1960, healthcare was 5.1% of the U.S. gross domestic product. In 2015, it jumped by 17%, and then in 2016, it had risen to 20% of the gross domestic product. So what consumers need to realize is the money that they pay for all the related care isn't all going to their actual care. Chunks of their money goes to administrative fees and the middlemen, the insurance companies.
And chunks of it go to Congress.
Yeah,
if I understand correctly, Big Pharma is the single biggest contributor to congressional political campaigns. I don't know. Do you know if that's true or false?
I would suspect it's probably true. Closer to the truth, but you know,
yeah, if it's not number one, it's in the top couple. They're bribing Congress to pass laws to exempt them from liability.
Well, how about this, though? And now we're mandated to buy health insurance. So, you know, this system makes you sick and then taxes you for being sick. Think about it.
I understand.
So, terrible lifelong racket. Tax. It is. And I love this this one woman, Dr. Kelly Brogan. She's a psychiatrist and a medical doctor. She's also the author of A Mind of Your Own. She says, when it comes to vaccines, do not relinquish your God-given power to doctors. And so what power does she mean? Well, she's referring to the instinct to protect yourself and even an unborn child. And she says, she's also referring to the deceitful science regarding vaccines, that vaccines are really weapons which eventually destroy immune systems, neurological systems, and overall health. There you go.
You know, I've talked about this before, and you may have heard this. I won't get into it in depth, but I was sued for $25,000 a day back in 2006 by the Attorney General of the State of Texas for the manufacturing and distribution of controlled substance, which was colloidal silver. I was just peripherally involved as a fiduciary. But the point is, I read the relevant law that defined drugs and food and medical devices, and every one of them are based on the presumption that we are nothing but livestock. And when I advanced that defense, I said, look, you can't treat me as livestock. I'm a man made in God's image as per the Bible. They just dropped the suit. They had invested $500,000 in 6 years. Mm-hmm. In pretrial investigations and hearings, and I wasn't the only defendant. I raised that defense, and they dropped it. They think of you. It's not. They think of us as animals, and they have no more liability for giving us an injection than they do for giving an injection to cows and pigs and sheep and goats out on the farm. You are deemed to be an animal, not a man or woman made in God's image, as per Genesis 1:26-28.
Well, that's what the Bible says, is wickedness in high places. And that includes those crafting those mandatory health laws. There you go.
That's right. And that's what we're looking at here. When they can inject you with these things, mm-hmm. why? You are deemed to be livestock. You don't have any significant rights. You have no more rights than a chicken in a Tyson poultry processing plant. Really, that's so the way pathetic. Government looks at you. The only difference between us and the chickens is we have guns. If we didn't have guns, I guarantee they'd be marching you right up the chute.
Do I have time to make one more point?
You got 30 seconds.
Okay, so there's a lot of ingredients in your vaccines aside from the disease. So if you are worried about your cleaning chemical agents, you know, in your home or office, they're also in your vaccines. If you're shopping for food to avoid preservatives, they're in your vaccine, so why would you want an injected into your bloodstream? And also, heavy metals are in your vaccines, and you're worried about the heavy metal in fish in your water supply, and yet you get a vaccine. So I just think it's ridiculous.
It's worse than ridiculous. It's wicked. Why don't you give us some contact information?
Absolutely. Wendy? People more powerful than they think. They can cleanse and nourish and protect themselves and even reverse vaccines. Call the folks at Apothecary Herbs, 866-229-3663, or visit us online at thepowerherbs.com.
That's Wendy Wilson, thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Thank you, Wendy. Look forward to talking to you next week. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we wanted to go ahead and get into the rate increase today. As I mentioned, they increased it a quarter percent today, and we're at 0.75%. And, of course, we've been very low for a very long time. It's only the second time since the central bank cut the borrowing cost to near zero since 2008. And, you know, you had the 10-year notes. They surged right after the decision. It seems like everything moved a little bit afterwards. Things are beginning to soften up a little bit. And the Fed also did release what they project the economy, the economic growth for this year is to be around 1.9%, and next year to be about 2.1%. So you can say that's
which
good.
Is not really up to snuff. They've really had it. They're looking for 3%. It's been at 3% for most of the last 50 years. 2.1%, 2%, 1.9%, not up to snuff. We're in a recession.
Again, she said at a press conference following her decision, she said that the fiscal stimulus, that's what I didn't get. She says fiscal stimulus may not be needed for the economy to reach full employment. And she also gave some clues about her future as Trump is preparing for the White House. She continues to say that she is going to serve out her full four-year term, which expires in February of 2018. And any consideration about whether she'd stay on as Fed, you know, like, I don't think anybody really cares whether she stays on as a Fed board governor or not. You know, I mean, she's not, you know, Alan Greenspan, you know, or even Bernanke for that matter. But so their suggestions are they will be raising rates. Their projected outlook for next year will be 3 increases, which still keeps us below 2.
Do you think that's happening?
No.
They've only had 2 in the last 12 months.
Actually,
in the last year. All right. One 12 months ago, one now.
Yeah.
And that's actually 2 in something like 8 or 9 years.
Correct.
Those are the first 2. Will we really accelerate to 3 next year? 3 rate increases? I mean, the odds suggest that if we went to 2, it's possible. 3 is not, it's not impossible, but you just play the odds on it, and they'd have to say, I don't know, I'm a little skeptical right now.
Well, I mean, we don't know. I mean, we don't know what market forces are going to push that, the bond yields, the 10-year, you know, bond. I mean, if that starts, you know, hitting 3%, I mean, I think we're just at a place where if anything takes off or does something that it shouldn't, I mean, it's the end. You had U.S. retail sales. I mean, everybody was saying how great retail sales was for Black Friday and so forth, but they barely rose in November.
Yeah.
The weak retail sales and industrial output readings reported today. Well, let me go on and see. The retail sales, the moderation in retail sales came about 2 months. They did have strong gains prior to November. But also you have household wealth, incomes rising. And again, to me, I look at incomes rising, how much of that is in household wealth, how much of that is disposable when you have your health, you know, health rates and everything else skyrocketing, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70%. That's going to eat up a lot of any increase in incomes. And also you have, with higher oil, you're going to have higher gasoline prices. So again, it's going to be eating up a lot of that disposable income. So, you know, you have good news, and then you have, you know, it comes in, you know, everybody's
you have good
all
news,
pumped
up. You have bad news, and you have fake news.
Fake.
I'm trying to sort between the three of them. What, now, is this good, bad, or fake? What is this? Anybody know?
What's
Mark Faber, he has the doom, gloom, and boom report, or that boom, gloom, and doom, but whatever it is. Maybe we should start one out called the good news, bad news, and fake news report.
Yeah.
Emulate Mark Faber.
Maybe we'll add that to the newsletter.
Maybe so.
But so we'll have to see how the markets shake out and so forth. Even in the aftermarket, gold did come back a little bit by about $3. It was down closer to 18. Now we're closer to 15. So we'll see how the markets react. There's been, I mean, it's really hard to tell with what we've seen in this Trump rally and in the markets and so forth.
Well, you know, the reason.
Again, this is all dressing. It's all window dressing for the end of the year, also.
I don't even know if it's window dressing. I'm not sure what it is exactly, but the one thing
it's
for
not
sure.
Reality.
There's the problem. We have seen last year they raised the interest rate by 0.25%, and the markets within a couple of weeks fell by, I don't remember, 12-15% within a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Gold jumped up dramatically. The stock markets fell dramatically, and it's not clear that the fundamentals drove any of that. And then we come around to this end of the year. Trump gets elected. And next thing you know, the stock market is up. I don't know the percentage, but it translates into 10% or more. Maybe better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 15, 18% perhaps, and just after Trump's election. And gold has dropped dramatically at that point in time. And the point is, my question is, where are the fundamentals driving this? What we are seeing is the markets crashed last January for what appear to me to be emotional and psychological reasons, and not fundamentals, not objective fundamentals. And now again, Trump gets elected, and everybody says hooray, and the markets and some of the markets go up and some go down again in a big response. These are emotional responses, and they're not small. We're not talking about an emotional response called caused the Dow Jones to go up 25 points or down 25 points on any given day. We're talking about hundreds or even thousands of points movement based on emotional responses. The market is volatile. It's not responding to fundamentals per se. It is apparently responding to psychological forces and emotional responses. And that I sit back and I look at it and say, this thing, there's no telling what it's going to do. I mean, on any given day, this thing can go up dramatically, down dramatically. Nobody exactly knows. And to me, even though the markets are not immediately responding to what appear to be fundamentals, it still tells me if you're smart, you're going to look at fundamentals, because this thing is flaky, shaky, and unpredictable. Look to the fundamentals, what's going to get you through for the next several years.
I think the rate increase was pretty much already bought into the markets and so forth.
Yeah, they say that, but we
get a knee-jerk reaction, and you know, we'll have to see how this follows out. You got to remember, people are trading, you know, and you got these hedge funds and so forth, and they move money to where they make money. And a lot of this is computer trading and these hedge funds, and there is no rhyme or reason for some of these trades because of how they trade and to the amount of volume that they can. They can make markets move. And when you have Donald Trump who tweets something about Boeing, or he tweets something about, you know, United Technologies, or he tweets something about another company that's, you know, in the stock market or in the Dow, in those top 30 companies, yeah, you can move You can move companies' numbers and you can move the Dow numbers. Now, everybody says, well, you know, everybody inside trades anymore. Yeah, but he's the first one that's really kind of done it out in the open. Everybody else does it behind the scenes. He just does it out in the open. And it does have impacts. And so, to me...
But is that impact reasonable, and is it taking us to places that are objectively valid, objectively reasonable? I mean, if the market's going up to 20,000 and there's fundamentals to support it, I say hooray. If the market's going up to 20,000 based on some emotional responses to somebody who's just the president-elect at this point in time, I'm saying, wait a second, is this valid?
If people are in paper,
is this real? And if it's not, what's going to happen?
If people are in paper, they should be very afraid of these markets because I think they can change on a dime, because there are no fundamentals underneath them at all.
The fundamentals are always there, but they're not responding to the fundamentals. They're being ignored
The stock market would be 10,000. If they responded to fundamentals, the stock market would be 10,000.
Maybe.
Gold would be 2,500.
And part of the problem, I don't know what the gold would be. I don't know what the markets would be per se. We can speculate on them. But we can't exactly have confidence in the market we have today. Once you see that this thing is moving, it's volatile, it goes up, why did it go up? I don't know, it just did. So let's climb on board. Is that enough to make a market go up? Is it just enough to inspire public confidence, public optimism, and all of a sudden the market is legitimately at 20,000 or maybe higher, the Dow at 20,000 or higher? Is it enough? Is that all we need? Is hooray for our side? Is this like a cheer? Is this like a cheerleading exercise, a pep rally, or whatever? Yay, yay! You know, we can all say hooray, and the market goes up. Isn't there a reality here that we should be looking at? And won't that reality ultimately overcome our pep rally, our emotional optimism? You know, wait a second, your team's not going to win.
I did read something today where they compared the stock markets as they're about as secure as Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. I had to chuckle at that one because, yeah, it's the same. It's absolutely the same.
I understand. And we are being caught in appearance rather than reality, and people are buying into this, or the computers are buying into it. I don't even know. I think you made a good point as to whether or not this is happening. Are we really looking at an emotional response in the markets, or are we looking at something happening with the computers? Are the computers, they're driving the markets more than anything else right now. Did the computers respond to Trump's election? Is it something that's programmed in, or did somebody just push a button and say, let's make the markets jump 15-20%? What do you say?
Well, I do believe that there's optimism in the markets, and I believe you have a lot of these. They see money being spent, and you see inflation, you know, coming into the markets. And as I had mentioned before, I thought we would see 20,000, but with inflation here, well, inflation hasn't really taken off yet per their numbers. So, you know, we'll just have to see how, you know,
we are bewildered and confused to some degree. Inspire confidence. You sit back and say, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Does anyone really know? There are plenty of opinions, but I don't think there's a consensus. I mean, Trump got elected, so the markets jump.
There's a lot of money when you're looking at infrastructure spending, and you look at the oil men that are coming into the market. We know oil prices will be going, you know, I would think theoretically they'd be going higher. You have a lot of spending to be done. A lot of optimism that jobs will be coming back into this country, yet nothing has happened.
No, I understand
the only
that.
The only difference from today versus a year ago, January, is Donald Trump was elected president.
Yep.
That's it. What pushed gold prices higher? Almost 30% for the year. What pushed that higher is all the same. The only difference is Donald Trump was elected president. And so.
Well, the whole thing, it is precisely because it's difficult to come up with explanations that you can rely on. I mean, everybody can come up with, well, I think it was this, and somebody else thinks it was something. Everybody's got an opinion. Right? But where is the consensus where we say this is reality?
I mean,
this is the truth of the matter. This is why this happened. It makes perfect sense. It's logical. We can understand that. Without being able to get that consensus, even if the consensus is mistaken, without being able to come to some sort of national consensus, can we rely on this? And if we can't, that inspires, you know, lack of confidence, weariness, whatever. The whole thing is
if it was so great, why couldn't the House pass a long-term spending bill for a year instead of just a short-term spending bill just funds the government until April, the end of April, to avert a government shutdown? I mean, it was to the point of a government shutdown. And so if things were so great, it'd be no problem.
I understand.
I mean, this is and so this is how you have to look at things. And so what's going to happen come April 28th? Well, they're going to put another Band-Aid on everything and extend it for, you know, or this is going to have to come out in the open and these things are going to have to be addressed. And it's going to say, well, you know what? We don't have the money for this, this, and that. I mean, this bill includes $170 million to address drinking water safety in cities like Flint, Michigan. Well, you know what? Flint, Michigan should be taking it. The state of Michigan should be taking care of that.
Yeah.
Not the federal government. I mean, there's a lot of other things in here. You know, to fund the House, this should have been on for, you know, asked Wendy about. The 21st Century Cures Act, the House passed. The bill would provide $872 million to boost medical research, drug approval, and efforts to address drug abuse. Well, you know what? Medical research, drug approval, that should be paid by the pharmaceutical companies, not by federal government, not by taxpayers.
You're talking about charging money to Big Pharma, Melody? What are you?
So again,
have you been
it's just
too much
like,
fluoride in your drinking water or something like that? We can't. They're the Congress favorite political campaign contributor. They give government lots of money. We're not going to charge. They're not going to pay.
So come April 28th, I'm hoping that maybe Donald Trump will say no.
Well, it's hard to say what's going to happen,
if he
but
can veto.
We're getting closer all the time to. You know, it becomes tiresome to say so. It gets tiresome to make the warning, essentially. And I know people are tired of hearing it, but just the same. Reality implies that there is good cause to be concerned, and there's cause to get yourself ready for some difficult times ahead. We're going to take a couple commercials, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
We are running a little special today. We have 20 brilliant uncirculated peace dollars. We're also including a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. We're including free shipping. Insurance is included in that, in addition to a free 1 ounce American Silver Eagle. And that is also going to include the little holiday packaging for that Silver Eagle. And that total package is $699. $699. It's a great little package. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And of course, make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and you can listen to the archives right from the website.
Hey, what? So,
what?
I think you ought to repeat that special, because maybe I wasn't listening properly, but I thought I heard you say there would be a gold eagle.
A 1/10 ounce American
gold. 1/10 ounce gold.
1/10 ounce.
Okay, I didn't hear the 1/10 ounce.
Well,
and
you
I
don't
was thinking
pay attention.
Well, maybe I do.
Maybe you don't.
Maybe I do, and maybe it's a good thing to clarify that before people start demanding a gold eagle for $600.
We would correct that during the call, but we have 20 brilliant uncirculated peace dollars, one 1/10 ounce. Get that out. One 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, includes your shipping and your insurance, in addition to a free 1 ounce American Silver Eagle, along with the holiday packaging for that Silver Eagle.
All right, Melody, that ad has my approval.
This ad is
just like in politics.
You.
It's like
just
in politics.
Hey,
I approve of this ad.
I got some good news here. There's some even though homelessness in America cities continue to decline. That sounds like good news, right?
You'd think so.
You'd think so, but the food banks and pantries, they're actually are still being stretched, because the number of people that need emergency food assistance is climbing.
Yeah.
And this is coming from a survey of mayors from 38 different cities across the country. The number of people seeking emergency food assistance increased by an average of 2% in 2016. And the majority, or 63% of those seeking assistance, were families. That is actually down from 67% a year ago. However, the proportion of people who were employed and in need of food assistance rose sharply, increasing to 51% from 42%. So it shows that people are not, you know, their dollars, or maybe they have the dollars, but they're just not spending it on food. Maybe they're spending it on all those cheaper TVs at Walmart and so forth. But the primary cause of hunger, the mayors said, are low wages. And they said that the jobs are beginning to come back, but they're not paying what they were paying before the 2000. And they're not going to. In addition to that, you have, you know, high housing costs. This country doesn't have any real affordable housing, and poverty were some of the major reasons cited by the mayor. So we have a lot of working poor. and people are sheltered. They're spending more of their income on housing, but they need assistance seeking food. And in addition to this article, I saw where college kids also, they're opening up food banks on campuses because these college students, the students aren't getting fed. They're lacking decent food in their meals. So I thought that was interesting.
So, man does not live on ramen
and yet,
noodles
sad,
alone.
Sad thing is, a lot of these food pantries and so forth, you know, it's hard for them to, you know, supply so many meals to and food to so many people, and yet we have farms that dispose of crops because they've bruised, or there's so much waste still in this country. If a tomato has a little bruise on it, they don't send it to the grocery store because people go to the grocery stores, don't want to pay for bruised food. So the food just gets disposed of at the farm. And a huge percent, what, 40%? I believe
really?
Is the number.
40%.
40%.
That, on one level,
number.
It doesn't surprise me.
Doesn't
because I go down to Tom Thumb that's buy groceries at a Tom Thumb grocery store just a few blocks away from where I live. And I am impressed by the quality, by the appearance of the food. I mean, they put up red bell peppers up there that look like they've been sculpted out of wax, and they are all uniform. They're all size. They all have they're uniformly red. I mean, these things. I like them, but I have to admit, it makes me wonder how can they produce such perfect food. And I guess the reason, part of the reason, is they have selected out everything that's imperfect, and they've lost 40%, yeah. And what they've got, the remaining 60%, they are almost spectacular in their visual appearance. And you see the same thing with broccoli and cabbages and one thing and another like that. But this is Tom Thumb. I'm sure I can go to other grocery stores, and I can get lower prices. All right, Tom Thumb's not giving any of this stuff away. They charge. At least the one here, you pay at least full price, if not more. You can go to other grocery stores. You can get, and the quality is not this. The visual appearance is not the same, and the prices are much lower. But still, 40%.
Yeah.
Tossed out by the farmers.
Surprising number. And I don't know how much of those of that produce can are GM.
Oh, I understand.
I don't know anymore.
So, I don't either. I don't even know if they're made by 3D printers, that they've got 3D printers that are printing out identical, seemingly identical red peppers. And I'm thinking to myself, holy mackerel. I mean, I don't know. It's surprising.
So a lot of waste in this country still, and it's... So, it's just a thought going into the holidays. Well, we should always be thankful for what we have, because there's a lot of people who do work, but they don't have a living wage. They're working poor. And we can cite all the various reasons why that is. There's one place you can look. It's Washington.
Yeah.
But let's move on. We'll save that for another day.
I've got something here I've got two articles that deal with drinking and drug use among U.S. teens. Here's the first one from Reuters. Drinking, drug use largely down among U.S. teens in 2016. This is from Reuters. The use of alcohol, marijuana, prescription medications, and illicit substances declined among U.S. teens again in 2016, continuing a long-term trend, according to a study released on Tuesday by the National Institute of Health. But the research found that high school seniors were still using cannabis at nearly the same levels as 2015, with 22.5% saying they'd smoked or ingested the drug at least once within the past month, and 6% reporting daily use. Clearly, our public health prevention efforts, as well as policy changes to reduce availability, are working to reduce teen drug use, especially among eighth graders. This is from spokesman for the National Institute of Drug Abuse. When they say clearly our public health prevention efforts are working, all right, I don't know. That might be the truth of the matter, but I am skeptical and I am wary. And here's another one, though, that suggests a possible explanation. Why is this happening? Why are the teenagers giving up on drugs or slowing their drug use? And here's this article is from International Business Times, and it says, new marijuana laws set for Massachusetts. Adults in Massachusetts will be able to puff pass as they please when the state's new law on recreational marijuana goes into full effect on Thursday. That's enough, but I think, and I'm being facetious here to some degree, but I'm wondering, have teens lost interest in drugs now that they're being legalized in different parts of the country? I mean, it used to be that you could do drugs. It was an act of rebellion. It was an act of asserting yourself against mom and dad. And now we are living in a world where grandma may give you a lid on you if you graduate from high school. Right? And I'm wondering, I'm joking, but I'm still wondering. Crossing my mind. Are the kids, marijuana, did they wreck the drug industry by legalizing it in some states? It's no longer trendy, it's no longer rebellious, and the kids, I don't want that drug. Mom and dad are stoned all the time. What do I want that for? Does that make any sense to you, Melody, or do you think that's probably a mistake?
Well, I just don't know how these reports were, you know, the surveys were taken, where they were taken, and, you know, if you legalize marijuana in some states, you know, were those accounted for?
I'm just mainly joking about, you know, this, but still, the idea that adults can do drugs, maybe it's not completely, the adults are doing drugs, it's legal at least in some states.
I mean,
and insofar as it is, the kids, they don't want to do what mom and dad are doing.
I don't joke when it comes to drugs, Al, because if anybody has had a family member or a dear friend or that had problems with drugs, I don't believe they should legalize drugs. I think if you use marijuana as a prescription medication, I think it should be dealt with through the medical profession. Your doctor writes you a prescription for it. Because I do believe that marijuana does play an important part in some illnesses, and it should be available to those that are sick. I talked to friends who visited Colorado. I said, well, what's it like with... She said, she says, you wouldn't believe it. Anywhere you go. I mean, people, she says, they're just lighting up everywhere. She says, you just bathrooms and restaurants, and she says, it's just everywhere. She says it was really bizarre. Now, you can't tell me that that is good for society. Well, and I think we're not going to see the numbers. I don't think we're going to see the impact on these cities for 20 years, 30 years, maybe sooner. But, you know, it's going to be a while before we see the actual impact that it has on the areas. And then by then, hey, maybe all 50 states will, you know, everybody will be drugged out. And nobody will care.
They'll care when they start to starve to death. They'll be caring at that point in time. But for me, I look at drugs from a different perspective. I think the fundamental addiction is not to marijuana or cocaine or any of the rest. The fundamental addiction is to dollar bills. And as long as the drugs are illegal, you can make a lot of money selling them.
Now, as long as our borders are...
I think that's what drives the business more than anything else. Because we've had all those drugs have been around here for centuries, or not most of them. Heroin's not a new invention. Cocaine's not a new invention. I mean, they used to make Coca-Cola.
You're right.
Made with cocaine.
80%, the population of this country, 80% of the opioids are used in this country. 80% of the world's. I mean, that's an incredible number.
I agree.
No, you do need to shut the borders down. You do need to get the money out. But that doesn't mean you legalize in order to do it. And, you know, it's, to me, it's another way to dumb down the population. And you can say, oh, and I know kids, I know teenage kids that wouldn't touch the stuff. My cousins, you know, in Ocean City, Maryland, they're Penn State. They're you know, they graduated with honors and everything. They wouldn't touch it. I get that, but yet there's the other half of the population, and I do believe it's a dumbing down to some degree of the population. It's part of the plan. I would love to see the money taken out of it, but I don't think legalizing is the right way. Closing the borders is, I will agree with them. Close those borders. Keep those drugs from coming in. Make it difficult to, you know, get these prescriptions. They hand out prescriptions like it's nothing. You know, when you're in the hospital with a procedure, the first thing they want to do is give you a prescription for, you know, something that's highly addictive, and they encourage you to take it. It's like, no.
You may be able to stop people from coming into this country by closing the borders. But drugs, they can't even stop drugs from getting into prisons. All right, you have four high walls and barbed wire and armed guards and dogs and rest that, and the drugs still get into those. They break through the walls of the prisons. I guarantee they'll break through whatever wall they have between at the borders because there's money driving them. If the money's there, the drugs are going.
We're not the only population in the world. Why is the United States? Because we have the most
probably
money?
Maybe because we have the most stringent drug laws. They make it profitable.
I don't know about that. Go check out China's
drugs. If you deal in drugs, there's big money to be made.
Go check out China's drug laws.
I know.
You know, so no, draconian. I don't think we're the, no.
Draconian, I get that. They'll kill people. You get caught doing drugs in some parts of the world, you'll die. You're not going to be fined or jailed. You're going to be executed. I understand it's a problem, and I don't know what the solution to the problem is, but, you know, I'm not in favor of a police state, so I am wary. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer.
Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.